Hi, I'm Talissa.
And I'm Rachel, and this is Transatlantic Crime, a true crime podcast that covers stories from each side of the pond. Every week, we will both cover a separate story with a running theme.
Disclaimer, this podcast will contain swearing and details that some people may find offensive. If you are of a sensitive disposition, listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Transatlantic Crime.
So close. So I took a nap and I've woken up and I don't know what fucking year it is because
lovely, amazing nap.
It was a nice nap, but like it's so hot here and it's gonna be hot for the next week, like 32 degrees Celsius. No. I don't even know what that is in Fahrenheit.
What is that in America? That's like 80-ish degrees maybe?
Yeah.
You guys don't really have like AC. That's not like a regular thing.
No, we just have to keep the curtains closed.
And ice buckets everywhere.
It's like horrible.
Oh,
I feel like shit. I'm so thirsty and hot. I feel like I'm being tortured. Like, you know when the Phelps family, like that most hated family in America, they're like, you're going to the hottest part of hell, Louis Theroux. Like, that's where I feel like I am. Something bit my arm. I don't know what it is. Like, I'm sweaty.
I don't know if our American listeners will know what you're talking about, but yeah.
Oh.
I think we get the sentiment.
You can just Google Megan Phelps, Phelps, and she's like part of this ridiculous cult, end of world Christian cult, and they're like, yeah. God hates America, and they like picket the funerals of dead soldiers, and they're just really like inflammatory and fucking love the Old Testament and just say that everybody's going to hell and stuff.
But Louis Theroux made a documentary about them, right?
Yeah, and he revisits them like three times. They hate him, but they love him. Like, he always goes back there, and they make signs saying like, God hates Louis, and like, Louis is a snake and stuff. It's so good.
Didn't one of the family members, she left?
Yeah, Megan.
I think Megan, yeah.
She did a TED Talk.
Right. And I think she was on Joe Rogan or something.
Oh, God. That's annoying. Although I will have to listen to her now because I'm obsessed with her.
Yeah, I'm only saying that because I think that's what, like, made her blow up.
Basically, she got out of the cult because on her phone, she had Words with Friends. Do you remember that app? It's like Scrabble.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
She had Words with Friends and she met a guy on Words with Friends. He's still pretty Christian, but he's not like crazy cult Christian. And he's a senator or like a congressman, or he's political, basically. She's got like a baby with him now and she's married to him and she like ran away with him.
Right. He started like questioning her and like they had really philosophical conversations.
Yeah.
She does talk about it on the Joe Rogan podcast. I think she talks about it on any podcast of like meeting her now husband. Yeah, not to like promote Rogan's podcast, but it's an interesting conversation.
All the crazy shit that he said has now been taken down, which is quite good.
That's true.
So if you want to listen to it, hopefully it won't pollute your mind. Like
right.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in the hottest part of hell.
I'm sorry.
Hell is a summer's day for me.
I hope you have some distracting podcasts and documentaries that you're listening to right now.
Great plug, Rach. Fantastic plug. Oh my God, right. So if you're in the UK, there's a program called 24 Hours in Police Custody. And there's a cold case.
Yeah, you've talked about that before.
Yeah. So there are like sometimes I just periodically check to see if there's a new one because they don't come out in any regulated format. They just pop up and there's one out.
Oh.
And it's about a little boy that got murdered in 1994 called Ricky Neave. And I really want to do it on this podcast, but because the 24 Hours has come out so recently, like I feel like people would have seen that and probably won't end up doing it. But he's 6 years old in 1994. So he is 1998 baby, so he's exactly the same age as me, and he like would have been my age now, but he got murdered when he was six, and it was on this like quite kind of rough council estate, and it was kind of like a satanic panic thing. Like they said that his mum did it because she had books on like witchcraft and like Aleister Crowley and dark magic.
Gosh.
And they were like, oh, you're,
Yeah.
it was a satanic killing. And so it fucking was not. Honestly,
Yeah.
like when parents murder their children, like when mothers murder their children anyway, they don't take them out of the house and kill them in a forest and like pose them. They drown them in a bath,
Yeah.
or they give them loads of sleeping pills and put them in a bed, or they, do you know what I mean? It's
Right.
never messy. It's never,
yeah.
It's not kind of
ritualistic.
Vengeful. No, like they kind of like do like mercy killings, don't they? Like mothers,
right?
In their own heads. So they had footage of her house, and the house was really, really dirty, and fucking toys and shit, and dirty water in the sink. And he was six, and he had to make his own breakfast, and he had to walk himself to school. And so that basically they were like, "You're a bad mother." But that's,
yeah.
Again, being neglectful doesn't make you a murderer. And I think she was a bit of a drug addict as well. So the murder gets pinned on her. But yeah, not to ruin it too much, but it wasn't her, which you know when you watch it anyway. You can see how upset she is. Like, she's genuinely heartbroken. And then they basically, in this program, they go out to find the real murderer. And it's so fucking good.
Ooh, okay.
Would highly recommend.
Maybe you could wait a bit and then tell it on the podcast in a while, because I would love to hear the story from you.
It's super fresh right now, but yeah, maybe I'll give it a while and then go for it. See, like, if there's any more developments, maybe. Yeah. And I've also been, so that's TV. And then podcast-wise, I've been listening to a podcast called Vigilante, which...
Okay.
Have you heard of it?
Yeah, I have. I subscribe to so many podcasts
that
I just like scroll through when I'm like, oh, this one looks good today, but I haven't gotten to it yet. Is it like Serial, or is it like a different thing every episode?
So that's funny that you say that, because like it is like Serial. It also really reminds me of, oh, S-Town.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a woman journalist, and she follows this one guy. And his daughter was murdered, and he's convinced that he knows who it is.
Yes.
And he basically, and he is the vigilante. That, so she follows him as he goes around, like, trying to find. So he's like, he's just like a citizen detective. And she follows him around.
Oh,
and
my gosh. Don't ruin it for me, because I keep hearing ads for it, and it sounds
very
like
good.
It gets crazy.
Yeah. I'm not far in. I'm on, like, the third episode. It's very good so far. And she is a fair storyteller. She's not too involved with him that she can't see when he's being a nutcase, which is
right.
Good.
Okay, that's good.
What about you? What have you been listening to?
Well, I've been listening to this podcast on Wondery called The Execution of Bonnie Lee.
Oh, what's that about? The Execution
Do
of Bonnie
you know
Lee,
that
I'm
story?
Assuming.
It is, yeah. She was murdered in 2001, I think, or maybe 2000.
Okay.
And I haven't finished it yet. It was here in LA, and the suspects were Robert Blake, famous actor from, like, he was a famous child actor in, like, you know, like the Little Rascals, like the black and white. Like, Little Rascals show. He was one of them.
Mo from The Simpsons always says he was in that.
I wonder, well, he does kind of, I guess Mo from The Simpsons does kind, is kind of similar to Robert Blake in, like, attitude. So there were two main suspects, him and then Marlon Brando's son.
What?
So it might sound familiar to you, because this woman, Bonnie Lee, it was like her mission in life to marry someone famous. That was her mission. And so she ends up getting pregnant, and she tells Marlon Brando's son, Christian Brando, that it's his baby. And then she also tells Robert Blake that it's his baby. And anyway, she ends up marrying Robert Blake, and then she gets murdered, and it's just a very well-made podcast.
Wow.
Everyone should listen to it.
That sounds so interesting, and I've never heard of it.
It is. And they keep talking about this restaurant that Robert Blake and Bonnie Lee went to all the time. And I've been, yeah. I used to live in that area. It's like this old Italian restaurant called Vitello's in Studio City. So it's just kind of cool to like know exactly the areas that they're talking about.
And yeah, definitely.
They talk about the North Hollywood police, which is, I used to live right next to the police station in North Hollywood. So it's fun for me to listen to as well, because I'm like, oh yeah, I know all these spots.
Yeah, I have to say, actually, I was listening to My Favorite Murder the other week, and Georgia covered a murder on there that was like a local LA one. And it was around the time of the Black Dahlia. And she's basically saying that they think she might be a victim of Robert Hodell, who is supposed to be the Black Dahlia murder. Like he's the main suspect. So you should definitely listen to the last episode of My Favorite Murder, because George's story is all about old Hollywood murder that they think is linked to him. So I knew you'd enjoy it when I was listening to it.
Yeah, I'll definitely listen to it. Mm-hmm. Haven't talked about My Favorite Murder in a while.
I still listen to it, like on the reg. I don't listen to the minisodes, because that's all people writing in, and I kind of think half the stories are made up. The ones that they actually tell, like, they are still great storytellers.
Yeah.
Especially Karen, I think. She's a really great storyteller. Who's that woman who ended up with, like, hooks on her hands? A guy, like, chopped off both her hands. Like,
yeah.
That story will forever live in my head, because it was just so, it was like one of the best episodes I've ever listened to. And it's Karen's story.
Oh my
she
gosh.
Told it.
Yeah. That one, and the one with the girl who ends up in the middle of the ocean.
Yes.
And I agree with you. I should get back into it.
They have some bangers.
They really do. And obviously, we take inspiration from them, because we have a very similar format. So
they are the OGs.
Thank you, My Favorite Murder.
Yeah.
You guys are the OGs.
You can tell they're kind of sick of it now, because like every time they're like, what episode is it? 250 whatever? Like, fucking hell, how long are we going to go on for? Because I don't think they need to do it anymore, because they've got a network like with loads of other successful podcasts on it. So they don't actually really need to keep going, but they do.
And they have a book, and they have tours, and they have so much. It's cool that they are still continuing.
I've also been listening to This Podcast Will Kill You, which is on the Exactly Right Network. Okay. I was like, no, I'm not going to enjoy it. I just convinced myself I wasn't going to enjoy it. I listened to it, and it's basically, it explains like every single bacteria and virus and disease that you could think of.
Yeah.
So I've been learning all about syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, herpes, like everything. I'm basically a sexually transmitted infection expert at this point. And they were doing what they did one about like the dancing plague of the 1500s. Do you know what that is?
Yes. I'm so interested in that.
Listen to that episode to start.
Okay. Yeah, there was a time where I was really obsessed with it, because I wanted to make a, I still want to, I want to make a short film about it, because it just sounds nuts and so, I don't know, it's just so interesting.
What weirds me out most about that is obviously one of the, they give loads of really good scientific explanations of what it could have been in terms of diseases or like conditions, but they also say the most obvious one, which is like mass hysteria.
Yes.
But they say they've got a different name for it, because like hysteria is misogynistic, because obviously the word hysteria comes from the Greek word for womb, and they would say that women were crazy. And so it's like, there's loads of like connotations around that, but like I couldn't be fucked to constantly remember what else they called it. But anyway, all of these things, like there's a dancing plague, and there was like a fainting plague.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also a laughing plague.
Yeah.
All the girls in one of these, all the girls in a school in Africa were laughing, and they just couldn't stop.
Yeah.
There was also another one where all the girls in a school were fainting. And apparently, like, this mass hysteria stuff, it does actually predominantly affect women.
Mm,
so that was just super interesting. there kind of is no real answer to the problem, but it's still super interesting to hear about like what it could have possibly been.
Right. I just find it so interesting because when I wanted to make a short film about it, I wanted to compare it to what was happening in this country with like QAnon and people like that and like the insurrection on January 6th. It was just like people just went nuts.
That was mass hysteria, I think.
It really was. And it was all, you know, instigated by Trump. So maybe I'll make it someday. But yeah, I went down a deep hole, like looking into that and looking into like dancing, like your whole body, your whole physical self is succumbing to this weird thing that everyone else is doing.
And it's just, people died of like exhaustion and dehydration. And it's fucking so weird.
Yeah. Okay. I will listen to that.
Yeah, that episode is definitely the one to start with.
All right, cool. Well,
speaking of episodes,
I feel like this is speaking of episodes. We're going to continue on with our theme from last week, which is coercive control. And it's not really a term that is used widely here in this country.
Yeah, I thought that.
I did find out that California in 2020, our governor, Gavin Newsom, which our mutual friend Alessandra always calls the governor Daddy Gabby, which I always think about every time I see his name.
Oh my God, why? Is he a Democrat?
He's a Democrat, and he's also like kind of a zaddy.
Is he?
He's not bad looking. Yeah.
I mean, that'll do as a politician. That's the best you can hope for.
Yeah. But he signed a bill in 2020, I wrote it down here, clarifying that conduct used to establish coercive control constitutes abuse under California's Domestic Violence Prevention Act, which I think that we are maybe one of the first states to actually do that.
Yeah.
Naming coercive control as like a form of abuse.
That's good.
So it is. And it's also, I was looking more into it. It's such a tricky thing to document because if someone is murdered, like in your story last week, you only have the perspective of one person to tell the story of coercive control.
Yeah.
When I was looking more into it, now evidence can be used by like getting impact statements from like family and friends or even like medical records. And I was even reading that gaslighting is a form of coercive control, but that is super hard to prove that being gaslit leads you into this form of control.
Yeah, I guess you have to prove that the other person knew that what they're saying isn't true and they're trying to convince you that it isn't true.
Another form of like proof is bank records, like financial control is also another form of it. I think it's good that people are starting to recognize it, and it's just going to be like an interesting thing to keep an eye on to see how it progresses.
Well, I think the whole Johnny Depp and Amber Heard case has kind of brought that to light. I think it's taught a few more people what gaslighting is and how it works. And in that way, it's a good thing.
Yeah. So my story this week is not exactly, it hasn't really been stated as coercive control, but I do think that there are forms of it in this story.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie today.
Oh my God, you didn't. I'm so happy about this because I obviously have been following it like everyone in true crime has. And
yes,
but I don't think I've fully sat down and like taken stock of exactly what happened.
Right. We did talk about it on a true crime chat episode a while back where I believe either, I mean, this happened last year. If you don't know what happened, both Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie are dead now. But I think when we were talking about it on our true crime chat, Brian Laundrie had just committed suicide, and we were speculating whether it was him, he committed suicide, or if he died by accident because he had gone camping and it was like very bad conditions where
it,
he was.
It hadn't, basically, it wasn't all over by that point when we were discussing it at all.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. All right, let's get into it. It's pretty hefty. And I also, I try and just kind of stick to the dates because obviously it is so fresh and new. We don't, you're right, we don't know everything yet. Still.
Mm-hmm.
So I think more will come out over the next couple of years. All right. So Gabby Petito was born March 19th, 1999 in Blue Point in Long Island, New York. Her parents are Joseph Petito and Nicole Schmidt. They split up and they married other people after Gabby, and she has a younger brother with the same parents. So after he was born, a few years later, they split up. Gabby ended up being the oldest of six siblings and half-siblings because both her parents ended up in separate marriages. Gabby's mom, Nicole, described her as a free spirit, very creative, and a bit different. And that's possibly how she ended up with Brian Laundrie, who was a year older. He grew up 2 miles away, and they went to the same high school. Brian Laundrie was a bit of a loner, and the two connected, and they started dating in high school. Gabby was a sophomore and Brian was a junior at Bayport Blue Point High School in Long Island. You guys don't really use that term like sophomore, junior, senior, freshman.
No, I don't know what it means, to be honest. Okay. Like, I don't know what any of it means. It seems like needless code. Just call it the number of the year that it is.
That's true. Although, I mean, in Ireland, it was also confusing because it, I feel like everyone has their different terms. You guys have O levels and A levels. In Ireland, there's junior cert and leaving cert. It's like in America, we don't know what that is. We don't know.
You
like
have a high school diploma, right? Which is like finishing. That's just finishing secondary school is a high school diploma.
Yeah, secondary school in America is high school. It's your last 4 years of high school. So you're a freshman, that's your first year of high school. Sophomore is the second year. Junior is the third year. And then senior is your last year of high school. So you graduate when you're 18. So much
to remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're year 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So we have 5 years.
11. So I guess that would be like year 7 is like 13, 14. For you guys?
No, year 7 is like 12 to 13.
Oh, okay.
Year 8 is like 12, 13. Basically, let's count backwards. In your last year, the maximum you'll be is 16. So you're 16 in your last year, 15, 14, 13, 12, maybe 11.
Right. And then 16 to 18 is like what you guys call college.
Yeah, what do you call that? Junior high?
That's still high school.
Oh. No.
That's still high school for us.
Oh, fuck this.
I think it's interesting because when we say college, you guys say something else. It's just different.
Like, nobody's going to legally make you go to college, whereas, like, you have to finish secondary school by law or you'll get in trouble for, like, skiving off school.
So you have to finish school. You have to finish school by 16.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have to do your GCSEs. Okay. Is what we call them.
Yeah.
And then your A levels, they're optional, but you have to do those if you want to get into uni.
Right.
You're never getting into uni if you haven't done those.
Right. So A levels are equivalent to like finishing your high school diploma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you leave high school at 16?
No, that's not a thing here. That's not a normal option. Thing. No.
Oh, okay. You're strict. Here, we're like, go out and get a trade.
I guess so.
Go and sweep a chimney.
Yeah. Or finish school.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to say that because I think we talk about that a lot where like somebody's a freshman or sophomore or junior, senior. And or like you guys say like you're in college or whatever. So sophomore, I guess, would be the equivalent of like 16, like your last year.
Oh, and okay. Then, okay.
So she was around 16 and he was 17. Okay, off of that tangent, yeah. Now, back to the story. Friends of the couple described their relationship as on again, off again, and that it was hard to know whether they were still dating or not at times. I have a couple of statements from their friends. One person said, one minute they'd be all over each other. The next minute, he'd be like, we're fighting. Brian Laundrie's friend Ben Matula said that. Another friend, Alyssa Chen, said, I never saw any sort of physical abuse. They had times they were toxic and times where everything seemed a lot more healthy. They had very low lows and very high highs, but they really seemed to love each other.
Same as our story last week.
That doesn't sound healthy.
No, it's not healthy at all.
I feel like when you're that age, or even now, like if you think that you're in a relationship where you have very low lows or very high highs, it's not worth it.
Don't pursue that. No, I need steady.
No, don't do it.
Steady as a rock type situations is what, yeah, I need.
Everyone does.
I don't want to be upset unnecessarily. No, you should be extremely upset. Like when there's like a death in the family, or you get fired, uh-huh, or you get really injured, or like really fucking extreme circumstances, not just day to day.
I agree.
That's not sustainable.
It's not. It's not good for you. It's not sustainable in all forms. Okay. So Laundrie graduated high school in 2016 and the two split up, but they eventually patched things up and they got back together when Gabby finished high school the following year. During that time, Brian's family moved to Bayport, Florida. After Gabby's graduation, the two moved in with Brian's parents in Bayport, which I didn't know that part. I didn't know
no,
that
I
they
didn't know that.
Lived together.
That's quite intense as well, Gabby, for an 18-year-old couple.
Yes.
You don't need to live together at that age, especially not in your parents' house.
No.
Cool it.
Don't do it. Live free. Cool it.
Knock it off.
Again, though, like, I can relate. Like, when you're that age, like, everything is so important.
You have to be in each other's pockets every second of every fucking day or you'll die, basically.
Yes. Gabby decided not to pursue higher education, and instead she found work as both a pharmacy technician and a waitress, while Laundrie sold his watercolor paintings and digital artwork.
Right, that's a red flag for me. No. I've been out with this guy, and it's a hard no from me.
I did see, though, that they did end up working at the same grocery store for a while. So he did have another.
Because fucking living together in your parents' house just isn't enough. I have to see you all fucking day at work as well. Jesus.
I did that.
No. It's because you don't trust them.
It was not good.
I don't want you out of my sight for a second.
I think for me, it was, when I lived with this person and we also worked at the same place, it was very codependent. Like, oh, I can't find a job. Will you help me find a job? Oh, come work here at my job.
Yeah.
Like that, which I feel like happens all the time.
Uh-huh.
So in July 2020, when Petito was 21, the two got engaged.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. You can see these social media posts. Obviously, she was a very big social media person.
Yeah.
And all it said was, like, she posted and it said, I said yes.
So it wasn't a gushing, like, love of my life post.
No, I don't think so, no.
Fair enough.
Gabby and Brian both dreamed of traveling. Triggered by the pandemic, the two decided to quit their jobs and travel the country so that Gabby could pursue her dream of being a travel blogger. The two had gone on a cross-country trip a year previously in a regular car, but this time they saved their money and they purchased a 2012 Ford Transit van. They transformed it into like a traveling home. They put a bed in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had like a little hot plate, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
On July 2nd, 2021, which is pretty much exactly a year ago, we're in July 2022.
Yeah.
The two set off on their road trip, planning to share the sights and experiences from their journey on social media, mainly on Instagram and on YouTube, which you can still watch their videos today.
Wow.
Gabby posted a lot under the hashtag van life. They had planned to travel through Utah and Colorado through the summer, visiting the national parks, and then they aimed to reach Oregon on the opposite side of the country by Halloween. It was Gabby's goal, and there's a really good Vanity Fair article that I read for some of this research. If you want to look it up, it is called, if you want to read it, Gabby Petito's Life With and Death by Brian Laundrie.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind reading that.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. So it was Gabby's goal to make a living from her blogs and postings. However, Brian was not as supportive. At one point, he was convincing her not to make her own website, and he was reportedly making her feel like she couldn't do anything right. So I feel like that is kind of
fucking hell.
A hint of coercive control.
To what end? Like,
yeah.
What are you getting out of that?
Clearly, it's just projection. Like, it sounds like he was selling artwork and watercolors.
Oh, yeah.
So he probably had his own.
I'm the star on here.
Yeah, he's the creative one, and she can't do it, or she's not doing it right, or just projection, I think.
Jealous fucker.
Yeah, and another part of coercive control is isolation, which it's just the two of them in the van constantly.
She relies on you for everything.
Yeah, you're relying on each other. He's probably relying on her to, like, big him up, and when she doesn't, then he starts...
Any dude with watercolors is a hard no from me. Any kind of fucking amateur artist, get out. If you're not famous by now, it ain't gonna happen. The big day of artists is over. Like, oh God.
Get a real job.
Literally. Have you seen his paintings? What are they like? I'm so glad he can't sell them from prison.
There's one that keeps popping up that's like weird animals, like with like human bodies.
Okay, you like sound that. Insane. No.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, that's his artwork.
Sure.
Maybe we'll post it.
Yeah.
Although, no, we won't, because I don't want to promote that. We're not going to post his artwork.
I'm going to look it up for my own amusement.
Yeah. He made her feel like she couldn't do anything right. He kind of put her down for trying to start her own website. The two argued consistently over the course of their trip. Ugh. One such argument was that Brian liked to go on their hikes barefoot. He liked to, like, prove how tough he was. So,
fucking idiot. Melissa,
you've gone on hikes with me. How would you feel if we went on one of those hikes barefoot?
My footwear was not appropriate at the best of times. You were like, dude, you need some trainers. I was like, well, I haven't got any, so this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
That was how that conversation went. Can you imagine if I turned around and went, actually, do you know what? Fuck the shoes. I'm not even going to bother. You'd be like, right, we're not going then. Like,
who are you? This is not you, Talissa.
It's fucking stupid and dangerous, and there's sharp rocks and snakes and fucking God knows what else.
Right. And so in this Vanity Fair article, they kind of talk about how he went barefoot and he would try and convince her to do it as well. And she would try it for a little bit and then she would just put her shoes on and continue on.
Yeah.
And at one point they finished this hike at a famous landmark, and there was a group of people on this hike where they're like all stopped and looking at the view, and people start asking her about her shoes. And she starts talking about them, and he's just off, you know, standing on his own in his bare feet, like probably waiting for someone to ask him about why he's in bare feet.
My God, you're deep.
Yeah, we all know someone like
you
that.
You must be so at one with nature, Brian.
But yeah, so one of their arguments was that he liked to do that and then he would come back with really dirty feet, and she didn't want him to come into the van with dirty feet because obviously that was their home, that was their bed, and
he would just ignore her
and get into the bed, and she wanted to try and keep it clean.
Oh, fuck's sake.
So that frustrated her.
Like, what would annoy me more is you'd have sore feet and you have to fucking drive. It's just selfish. Your feet are going to be fucked up.
There's, Yeah, there's so many forms of that that are just selfish, where you're also not listening to like the boundaries of your partner, where if your partner values cleanliness, that's a boundary that you should take seriously.
You're not asking them to cut their feet off. You're asking them to wipe their feet before they put them in the bed that you sleep in.
Yeah, right. So over this trip, Gabby's family continued to keep in contact with her. They supported her and they encouraged her, and obviously they followed along on her social media. At one point, Gabby's father even ordered dinner for them through Uber Eats because they did not have Wi-Fi one night due to a power outage. So just to say that her family were very much in contact with her, and they followed along and they really cared about her. And I guess I didn't really see much on his family on how supportive they were of him during this trip, but it sounds like maybe they weren't. Okay, so on August 12th, 2021, a witness saw Gabby and Brian Laundry arguing over a phone while their Ford Transit van was parked near Moonflower Community Cooperative in Moab, Utah. Mm-hmm. This person called 911 claiming he witnessed a domestic violence incident in which, in quotes, a male had been observed to have assaulted the female.
That's bad. Like, if a couple's having an argument, usually you just ignore it. Usually you're like, yeah, that's their business. Like, eesh, that's a bit awkward, but all couples fight. Whereas if you think, shit, like, she looks like she's in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And for it to get to a point where somebody is calling 911, that means that it's bad.
It is bad. Must be.
Yeah. So at that point, when the 911 call happened, the couple drove off, but police caught up with their van near the entrance to Arches National Park. In the body cam footage, which we can all look at now, it's on YouTube.
Yeah.
Petito was very emotional and she was crying as Laundry appeared calm. At this point, this is in quotes, at this point, it sounds like she's the primary aggressor, an officer said in the video. Petito and Laundry were questioned separately, and Petito told officers that they had been fighting and claimed she had really bad OCD. So this is maybe about his dirty feet. While cleaning, Petito said that she apologized to Laundry for being, in quotes, being so mean. And she said she was really stressed because she had a lot of work to do on her computer that morning.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I'm trying to start a blog, so I've been building my website, so I've just been really stressed, and he doesn't seem to really believe that I can do any of it, so that's kind of been like a downer, she said to the police officer. She said, I don't know, we've been fighting all morning and he wouldn't let me in the car before. One of the officers asked Laundry about scratches on his face. Laundry told the officer that Gabby tried to slap him because she thought he was going to leave her just on the side of the road. So at that point, the officers determined that insufficient evidence existed to justify criminal charges. I don't think either of them wanted to pursue any kind of like criminal charges. And so the police recommended that they separate for the evening. Brian Laundry got a hotel room and Gabby stayed in the van. So that is what happened on August 12th.
So sad, because it's just like, well, I mean, like, on the surface, as far as the police could see, it's just a stupid teenage argument that's gotten really out of hand.
Right, exactly.
But, like, the scratches on the face and, and like, the not letting her back in the car, and also her saying that he says, I can't do anything, and all of that. Yeah. Like, that is like breadcrumbs of coercive control and domestic abuse.
Right. And in the video, you can see how upset she is and how apologetic she is. And on the other hand, he's just like kind of chuckling a little bit and trying to be cool and calm with the cops. And I feel like that's,
you really feel for her, don't you?
Yeah. And he's one of the things I hated, like, having been in, like, you know, similar situations, is when the other person puts down the situation, like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. And inside, You're just like, this is, I'm really upset and I'm really sorry and I'm trying to like make things right. But
you're making this into not a big deal. Yeah, it's breaking my fucking heart that we're arguing like this because I love you and I don't want to be arguing like this. And you just don't think it's a big deal to argue this much.
Right. Take accountability. That's all. I think that's when you're young, you don't really have that kind of knowledge to like take accountability of yourself. Right.
Yeah. You can't step back and go, okay, this has gotten out of hand. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gabby posted her last video to YouTube on August 19th, which was a week after that incident. It showed the two smiling, kissing, and running on beaches. On August 24th, 2021, Gabby and Brian were at the Fairfield Inn and Suites in Salt Lake City in Utah. That day, they left Salt Lake City for Grand Teton National Park in Teton County, Wyoming. That was the last day that Gabby was seen alive.
Oh, shit.
On August 25th, so the next day, her mother spoke to her on FaceTime. Then she also posted on Instagram, although some people speculate whether it was Gabby posting or Brian, because it said Happy Halloween. It was a picture and it said Happy Halloween. It's like, why are you saying that? Like, it's August.
August, yeah.
Yeah. So after her FaceTime call with her mom, Petito's communication style suddenly shifted, according to her mom, and that made her mom, Nicole, like feel a little bit weird about it. So from August 24th to August 30th, the communication was just kind of weird. Petito sent, in quotes, an odd text to her mom about her grandfather, which, according to Nicole, seemed out of character for her daughter. That text on August 27th, it said, "Can you help Stan? I just keep getting his voicemails and missed calls." Stan is her grandpa, Gabby's grandpa, and she never called him Stan.
No, why the fuck would you call him Stan? You're calling grandpa.
Yeah, how many people call their grandpa by their name?
First name.
Yeah. So she never called him Stan, and so that was just a little bit weird. The last text message her mother received from her cell phone was on August 30th, which read, "No service in Yosemite," which is weird because Yosemite is in California. And they, on August 24th, they were last seen heading to Wyoming, which is nowhere near California.
No.
So it sounds like maybe Brian was trying to throw things off.
He's not even doing that well. Say nothing. Or...
Yeah.
It's almost like he's gone a bit mad.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's probably... He's probably like, what do I do now?
Yeah, he's lost it.
Yeah, so from August 30th, which is what that text, no service in Yosemite, until September 10th, Nicole had not heard from Gabby. Yeah, that's a while. You would start stressing.
Yeah.
During that time, though, on September 1st, Brian returned to his parents' home in Florida in the couple's van alone.
Okay.
5 days later, Brian and his parents went camping together 75 miles away. Yeah.
Oh.
So
they only live 2 miles down the road from each other, right?
No, that's when they grew up together in Long Island.
Okay, okay.
So Gabby's mom is in Long Island still. Gabby's dad actually moved to Florida as well to like be closer to Gabby when she moved in with Brian. So they know that she's not around. So on September 11th, her mother reported her missing to the Suffolk County Police Department in Long Island. On September 15th, Brian was named as a person of interest in her disappearance. On September 17th, his parents reported him missing. So within that week of them reporting her missing, he goes missing.
Okay.
And at that time, he wasn't reported a suspect, although he was a person of interest, because obviously they wanted to question him. He's the last person that was with her.
He's fucking going camping, mate. He's busy.
Right. This is the time where all of us started seeing things. Like, it started to be in the media everywhere. And so several witnesses, came forward at that time saying that they gave Brian Laundrie a ride near a Wyoming camping site where he claimed that he was staying with his girlfriend, Gabby, and she stayed back in the van to work on social media posts. And he had been like hitchhiking around getting rides and stuff. So two separate people said that they had given Brian Laundrie a ride and that he had mentioned that his girlfriend was back in the van working and that's why he needed a ride somewhere.
He's so weird.
Yeah. And I think that was probably the point where he was sending weird texts and posting on social media.
Panicking, it sounds like.
Just panicking, trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
On September 17th, after several days of both Petito's family and police pleading with Laundrie's family to cooperate in the investigation, because if you remember, Brian Laundrie's family were just avoiding everyone and people started picketing their yard. They like, lawyered up. Really hard. I remember talking about it with you and being very frustrated. If your son had a girlfriend that went missing, you'd be like, dude, you got to say something. Like, you're not going to defend him.
I just think like, and this is like, you know, being very kind. He must have just said to his parents, we broke up. I don't want to talk about it.
Or she went off. She left me.
Yeah.
I don't know where she's at.
Yeah. I don't like, he must have just stone.
See that being a conversation.
Stonewalled them. That's like the best I can give them in terms of being kind as to why they were being cunts about it.
I almost agree with you. The fact that they went camping together, like, oh, let's get away from it all.
Let's cheer Brian up.
Yeah. What conversations were had on that camping trip? I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
So they're pleading with the Laundrie family to cooperate. Laundrie's family requests that the police come to their home where they share that they haven't seen Brian since September 14th.
Okay,
during this time, the media started reporting the missing case, and both families were seen on the news with Gabby's family pleading for help and Laundrie's family, like I said, actively avoiding cameras and protesters outside their home. Jesus. So at this point, they had stated that he had been missing for a couple of days. So they're both missing. On September 19th, 8 days after Gabby was reported missing, remains believed to be hers were found in Grand Teton National Park in Wyoming, as confirmed by the FBI. Gabby's death was officially ruled a homicide, and Laundrie was named a person of interest. Teton County Coroner Dr. Brent Blue made an initial determination that she died by homicide, and then a month later, on October 12th, he said that she was strangled to death 3 to 4 weeks before her body was found. Which,
whoa, that's a long time.
I believe, yeah, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but you posted his suicide note. And I think in the note, didn't he say that she fell or something and that he didn't know what to do or that it was cold?
God.
Or
he said she fell and hit her head and then she was in and out of consciousness and she was... I think at one point he says, like, asked her to put her out of her misery or something. Like, I don't think he says I strangled her. I think he says I just put her out of her misery, or he puts it in, like, you know, quite a flowery language that is in no way taking responsibility for what actually happened. But, yeah, he's basically saying that she was, like, brain damaged beyond all control and they weren't going to make it through the night and just lies.
Yeah.
That make him out to be a hero.
Yeah.
And her to be
so again,
a
like,
dying wounded animal.
When clearly, according to the coroner's report, she was just strangled.
Yeah.
An arrest warrant was issued on September 23rd for Laundrie. A manhunt followed in Florida with authorities searching rural campgrounds and parks because he had gone missing. His family said that he probably went camping because he took the camping gear. So they're searching the campgrounds. They're searching parks. And then on October 20th, remains were found in Carlton Reserve in Florida. They were Laundrie's, and he had died by an apparent self-inflicted single gunshot wound to his head. I remember when we talked about this before, I thought that he had just died because it was really bad conditions at that time. he was found in like water and there was flooding and stuff like that. But no, I was wrong. He killed himself.
And he's taken that gun with him from his house, obviously. So he planned on killing himself when he left.
Yeah, right. On January 21st of this year, 2022, FBI reports that Brian Laundrie claimed responsibility for his fiance's death in a notebook found near his remains, which is what you posted. Mm-hmm. The FBI in Denver, which led the investigation, says a notebook, a backpack, and a revolver were found near the remains, later identified as Laundrie's. In the notebook was Laundrie's written confession, the FBI says. The FBI also confirmed that Laundrie had been, in quotes, attempting to deceive law enforcement by giving the impression that Miss Petito was still alive by continuing a text chain between their two phones after she is believed to have died.
What a piece of shit.
Yeah, which I'd love to see that too. I don't think they have released that.
Not that I've seen. But it's just going to be like sickening to read. It's going to be like, hey, baby, love you. Or like, you know, just some fucking sugary crap.
Where are you? I haven't heard I'm sorry. From you.
Like, he's going to be like, he's going to make out that she's like, oh, I'm sorry I shouted at you. Like, I'm such a bad girlfriend. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I bet like he would make her look worse in the text as well. And he would be like, it's okay. Yeah. I understand your stress. Like, or something. Like, because the suicide note, he admits that he was the one that killed her, but he could not have made it sound more of a mercy killing.
Right.
Just something like that
she wanted this.
He did not have a choice. Like, he was like, I did what was best for like everybody involved. Like, he just, he completely exonerates himself in the note. And everyone will know anyway.
Yeah.
But he still couldn't do it.
We all have our opinions. It's kind of delusional to think that you can write all that down and continue the whole facade up to that point.
Yeah, and he did. He really did.
And think that everyone's going to believe you, because I don't think anybody does.
The deluded part is thinking that it's believable.
Right. Following that, in 2022, Gabby's parents have filed lawsuits against the Laundrie family, claiming that Brian shared with them that he had killed Gabby and they did not report it. The Laundrie family have fought to dismiss the claims, saying that it was their constitutional right at the time to not share information.
What?
Is nuts.
No.
Yeah.
That's not true.
Right.
It's a lawyer's constitutional right to have a lawyer-client privilege, but you ain't a lawyer. Right.
No. They weren't being helpful to the police or the investigation, and I completely agree with Gabby's parents' lawsuit. And
yeah, I hope they
just
win.
This past, like a month ago, on June 22nd, or at least that's when the article was posted, they showed a video of them filing this court proceedings. And the Laundrie lawyer is completely like, oh, it was their right not to do this. And it's just like, what kind of lawyer is going to confidently say that?
I know,
it doesn't make any sense,
dude. I'm not even an American, and even I know that's horseshit.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody's gonna stand behind that.
It makes you an accessory after the fact,
or during an active missing persons investigation.
Yeah, to withhold evidence.
So Patrick Riley, the Petito lawyer, said, in quotes, the Laundries should be responsible for their conduct and what they did after they knew that Gabby was dead and where her body was located. That's another point of it, is that if Brian told them that, even if Brian said, like, something happened and there was an accident, and said, like, where they were, they didn't share where her body was. They didn't share any of that kind of information. So. No. That's just what their lawyer said. That was like a few weeks ago that this happened. If the judge decides the Petito's case has enough evidence and should proceed, the jury trial is scheduled to begin in August of 2023. So that is ongoing.
Wow, I'll be watching that.
And then this, we'll all be keeping an eye on it. This last bit, Gabby's parents have started a foundation called the Gabby Petito Foundation. Their mission is to address the needs of organizations that support locating missing persons and to provide aid to organizations that assist victims of domestic violence situations through education, awareness, and prevention strategies. So I think part of that too is making people aware of like coercive control and like emotional abuse. Mm-hmm. On their website, which you can go to, GabbyPetitoFoundation.org, it says, "We wish to turn our personal tragedy into a positive. It is our hope that Gabby's foundation will bring these important issues into the forefront of the public eye to the benefit of all our communities." And that is the ongoing story of Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie.
Wow, good job. There's so much stuff in there that I didn't know. I forgot they were engaged.
There's so much more, too.
Yeah, and do you know what? I think, like, okay, all couples argue. They were in a van in lockdown. Like, it's obviously not going to be plain sailing, like, the whole time. But I think, like, the biggest takeaway for me from that is that he said, like, you can't do this, or you're useless, or you're shit at something. You do not say that to your partner or even your friend.
No, no.
You don't put someone's dreams down.
I wouldn't even say that to someone I didn't like.
Exactly. Just ignore it. If you don't think they can do it, just let them find out on their own. They will find out on their own if they're shit at it. And even if they're shit at it, maybe they enjoy it. What fucking business is it of yours?
Yeah. Follow your passion and don't let anyone put it down. And if they are,
especially not some fucking
twonk
named
you.
Brian. Some fucking...
I agree.
Some fucking goof who's like... obviously the most privileged fucking white kid ever whose parents just let him get away with whatever the fuck he wants. Don't let that guy
That's another thing to
put you down.
Right. And I should also mention, like, this became a huge media story, and it also brought up the fact that obviously Gabby and Brian are both a pretty young white couple.
Missing white woman syndrome.
There are There are tons and tons of stories of not white people where women go missing because of domestic violence or coercive control. And because they're not white, then their stories aren't shared. So that's another part of the story that I think is important to mention. That's it.
Fuck. Obviously, when I was a kid, there were stories that were in the news, but I wasn't exactly following them because I was a kid. Whereas, like, now I'm really into true crime and I know that's something I'm interested in. Like, when something like this comes up and you see it unfold, it's so weird.
Yeah.
Like, the whole Chris Watts thing. That unfolded live, didn't it, really?
Right. It really did. And when it's so obvious what has gone down in this case with Brian Laundrie, it was like, it's so obvious that when your parents are trying to hide you and aren't talking to the police and you return alone in your shared home, clearly something has happened.
And he's not like,
and it's
fucking
so frustrating to see it live.
He's not the sharpest tool in the box. Like, did he not, he definitely didn't clear all of her stuff out of the van and be like, oh, she left. I bet all her stuff was still in
I'm
it.
I'm not sure.
Like, I bet he did such a hack job of hiding.
Yeah, I think that's, I should have included that information, but I didn't. So I would encourage listeners to go and look themselves, because that is speculation, because I don't remember if he, like, cleaned out the van or if he brought her stuff back or, like, what there was. But, yeah, I think
people should go look up the story themselves. I'm sure it's in the depths of Reddit somewhere. And, yeah.
It is. And I think there's been several, like a 2020 episode. I think Dateline, there's been all kinds of actual mainstream episodes about their story. So go watch them.
Yeah. Also, I think you should plug your show that's come out. And you should also plug your podcast that you did.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
It's okay.
Okay. Thanks for reminding me. Okay, so this is coming out on Monday, July 11th, and the show that I've been working on for the past year and a half called Victoria's Secret, Angels and Demons.
And it has been a secret Hasn't it? You haven't been able to talk about it.
Yeah, I couldn't really talk about the ins and outs of it, just that it was about Victoria's Secret. But yeah, it's a 3-part documentary. It's coming out on Hulu this Thursday, July 14th. I don't know if it'll be in the UK at the same time, but I'll find out. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe we'll repost the trailer as well, because it is a little bit true crimey. It's with the connection to Jeffrey Epstein and all kinds of sketchy,
just bad, bad men stuff.
Bad men, yes.
Bad men and women in underwear.
Bad men. Yeah. So go watch that, and let us know what you think. I hope you enjoy it. It's pretty good.
Is your name going to be in the credits?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, let's get a picture of that.
And then, yeah, I was a guest on my friend Crystal's podcast called Care Your Way to Success. And I just it has nothing to do with true crime, but I just talk about like filmmaking and being a caring person in your profession.
And you are a caring person. So nice.
Well,
so
yeah, I try to be.
I'll listen to that too. I haven't listened to that yet. I've been boiling to death, if you'll excuse me.
Yeah, I love it. You should make a list of like Talissa's Beat the Heat. Listen to these distracting podcasts.
Mate,
unless beat the heat.
Unless the fucking podcasts are ice blowing in my ears, then there is nothing to help me there. Like, I fucking hate this.
Oh man. All right. Yeah, well, so let's leave it there.
I'm off for an
I
ice
want
bath.
You to cool off. Yeah, go take an ice bath. I hope you can get some sleep tonight and that it cools off in England.
Cool. All right. Well, all the best, mate. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Transatlantic Crime this week. If you liked what you heard, please rate, review, and subscribe.
And if you'd like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter at @TransatCrimePod, Instagram at Transatlantic Crime, and on Facebook with Transatlantic Crime Podcast.
Thanks, bye.